The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 434 on the podcast day. Looking at the micro, small cap commentator Doc Holliday talks about, are you ready for this? Onzima Ventures, MX Oil, Blenheim Resources, African Potash, EC Minerals, Metal Tiger, 88 Energy, EKF Diagnostics, Empyrean, Nostraterra, and Arion Silver. Is that enough for you? Plus, I also have CEO of TriStar Resources, that's TSTR, Guy Eastor talks about the developments at their Oman Antimony Roaster project, and Darren Sinden of Admiral Markets UK looks at the macro and encourages us all to think about the bearishness, because he thinks there's some volatility ahead, and I agree with him.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
Joining me on the podcast right now is small cap aficionado Doc Holliday. All right, Doc.
Hey, Justin, how are you?
I'm all right, yes. It's been a bit of a bounce. It's a bit more lively. Didn't you think the AIM market is a bit more lively of late?
Yeah, I think we've all been waiting for it since last October, so it's about time that things started to pick up. There's been a few different kind of shakes and moves in different areas, but yeah, certainly there seems to be a bit more money sloshing around in the junior market space at the moment.
Yeah, I tell you what's doing well. A couple of things are Onzima's doing well, which you mentioned quite a few times before the rise. That's doing very well, isn't it?
Yeah, they've announced that they've done the deal with N4 Pharma. I know you spoke with Nigel Theobald last week. Really astute guy, and I think there's a longer-term growth story there. And from what I can gather, they're looking to, and have announced that they've invested in Regency more recently, and MX Oil today. They announced that they're taking a position in that fundraise. I think the concept here is, and it might take a few more kind of moves in the market to kind of get the message across, but I think the move here is to take opportunity of short-term investments which are presented whilst building a long-term growth story in N4 Pharma.
Yeah, I'm a bit gutted with that. I mean, you mentioned them a couple of times. Yeah, it's like one of those things, it takes a while to sink in, and I didn't really get involved, and they've had quite a big rise now. What is it today? And I've they're just flat today. But they've had a rise last week, but I don't want to jump in now. You know, it's just it's risen too fast, too far, and I think I want it to come back a bit. But will it happen? I don't know. You know, that's the game you play, isn't it?
It is, mate. We never know. I think with every kind of big rise, there's going to be a pullback and a back test. You know, whether we've seen that already remains to be seen, because I think the company raised some cash at spot 70. It went to about 105, come off hard down to about half penny mark. I was talking about it quite a bit there as well. And it's made that move up to 130, back to 105 now. It could be argued that we've already saw that back test. But, you know, you never just know. And the thing is, the markets can change on a two pence on AIM. So there's always going to be opportunities. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, what do you think about MX Oil? Because they've raised this additional 2.5 million. Was it 0.75, I think? And you know, people have gone in for the placing. I mean, what do you think about their prospects now?
Look, you know, the business that they're doing out there seems to be good business, assuming that this deal goes ahead, assuming that they can get, I think that the uplift costs $35, so there's marginal profitability at this level, and as the oil price goes up, you know, the margin increases. I think if in Nigeria comes to pass and they start to produce 11,000 barrels, 500 barrels to MX Oil, then it's going to look like a good deal. But the problem that you've got is people now sceptical about some of the cash coming in, the concern that the company are kind of diluting at a rate of knots, and there's perhaps that the longer term investors have been overlooked. And I can understand the kind of scepticism and frustrations from those investors. I didn't take part in it and didn't really get too involved, because I felt that the company were looking for X amount of cash and took Y. I think they took a bit more than they needed. Is it a case that the company just want to fortify the balance sheet, or is it, you know, brokers being, you know, kind of having the snouts in the trough? I think it's more of the latter than the early, but I could be wrong. So for me, over the medium term, I'm sure things will work out well for MXall. In the short term, there's going to be opportunity, I'm sure, for people to trade the stock. There's going to be short-term gains as well, particularly if you start to see the cash come in from Nigeria. You know, you'll see a colossal rise then. But I just think that there's a lot of stock now, you know, swilling about. And there's obviously some of those longer-term investors that are carrying the can on it. And I feel like they've not been kind of given the right level of attention. But, you know, it is what it is. I think it's, I still believe that the company's got a good story here. It just needs perhaps to be brushed up a little bit, and perhaps the company should come out now and start to do a bit more explaining as to what and why they've done what they've done, and that perhaps will put any of these kind of concerns to rest.
Yeah, well, one thing is, we know in this market of uncertainty, it's never bad. I mean, you know, you could say that the brokers are getting their nose in the trough there, but it's never bad to have a lot of cash as an junior oil player. You've got to have cash, haven't you? That's the thing. And I suppose now, at least they haven't got that worry of having to go back to the market. Like we saw a while back with IRG, when they raised, and they didn't raise nowhere near enough. And they were, we know what happened to them.
Absolutely. I think the story with MXall is a little different. The story with IRG, I mean, that company is in a lot worse state than we could have ever anticipated, and I hope that isn't the case here for MX. But we always knew that the company were going to need to come back and raise some cash. They were looking to do a bond issue. There was all sorts of different things that could have worked in the favour. They could have done the deal on the assets then. They'd got enough cash. The problem is The cash call and the potential deal on the IJ assets are coming at the same time, and you can't risk one to lose the other. So, it's a tough one. It's a tough one out there for these guys. You know, they're battling in a really tough oil environment. As I say, it'd be interesting to see what the company have got to say. I think perhaps now's the time to answer a few of those kind of cynical investor concerns and look to move on. You know, if they land this deal, it'll go particularly well, and you'll see a real big rise. I'm sure people would then argue that they've done a bit of a friends and family funding round, and everybody's making good money on the back of it. If they don't do the deal, then you're going to see people really start to compound the kind of disappointment over the last 12 months.
Yeah, well, I've got to say, I put a limit order in today, and it got filled at 0.8, and I just thought, well, hang on. They've got this deal for 18 million. Initially, it was 3.5 million, I'm reading here, would be in advance. And it's supposed to be today the money's going in. So we'll see there, what happens. And I just think at this level, maybe, and I've spoken to Stephanie, he's got his head switched on there in the right direction. I just think, surely now there's more reward than risk here.
There's no doubt about it. I mean, Steph's one of the most motivated guys I've spoke to in the last few years. He's put everything on the line for this, and he's worked hard for the company's success. He's not, in my opinion, somebody that's, rolling around on the luncheon circuit in London with his hands in his pocket. He's out, he's been in country over in Mexico, and he's actively been looking to secure the forward steps that the business need him to take.
Yeah, and when I've had him on the podcast, he is a stickler for detail. I know that because we'll have, emails going back to and fro before he gets on the podcast every time. He wants to know everything about everything. And so he's one of those guys that's, very in control of what he's doing. And he's not slapdash in any way whatsoever. So he's, very workable guy. Okay, so what else have you got your eyes on, Doc? What are you looking at the moment?
I'm still looking at that the FTSE, to be honest. It got up near that 61.90 something again today. I might have even done 6200. I think it's looking a bit overheated. We've had a big move in a lot of these kind of major oil companies with some of the major mining companies. At some point, some of that heat's got to come out of it. So I'm tracking the FTSE to go down. I've taken a position, to support my theory. We'll see how that one plays out. Just glancing through, obviously you can see Blenheim Resources has jumped 20% in the last week. There's a lot of people who bought into African Potash at 1.25. That's had a bit of a move up, and Blenheim's kind of being dragged up with it. Cleverly's got the law of attraction right now, and we'll see whether he can deliver on one then the other. I think if we see African Potash, announced that they've got some cash in the bank, then you'll see a bit of excitement there, and that seems to be reflective with Glenarm Resources as well. So it'll be an interesting one to see what those two do, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? Literally, I've got a chart that is saved from a while back, and I've just got a massive yellow line across the 6200 level on the FTSE. And you can see it bounces, it's you know, banged its head on that resistance a couple of times, and you think, will it get over that? Or is it just going to, you know, collapse again? Because it seems like if you're going to short, it's a good time to short. Because it finished, 6199 the other day, and I thought it couldn't get any closer, you know, and it dropped back from that.
The only thing that we could argue there again is if you knock on the door enough times, eventually it'll open. So, you know, I hope that's not the case, but that's the risk right now. I do remain to think that some of these big resource companies that have thankfully seen some uplift have had a good run, and I think there's a bit of heat to come out of them. You know, one of the junior ones in the resource space that we discussed last week, for all the wrong reasons in some respects, was ECR Minerals. We now know that they went on and did exactly what we discussed on your show, and that was they've announced that they're going to, you know, draw down on the death spiral agreement, which they've now put in place for £600,000. So, you know, I took a lot of stick over that. A lot of people give me a hard time, telling me that it was complete nonsense, you know, and I was being cruel or unkind. The truth of it is, the reality bites. They do the deal. So it'd be interesting now to see if 88 Energy go on their kind of aggressive decline, and or if Metal Tiger again go the way I expect they will. I don't want to really comment much further on them than that, because it seems to get, as I say, a lot of negative press for that. But you know, one out of the three of all has already happened, and we're only a week on.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I hold Metal Tiger, and they are at the moment, I think, about one of the best performers in my portfolio. They're about 90% up, and so it's quite nice to see that.
Have you taken?
Yeah, no, I did scale out. Yeah, I did scale out a little bit, and yeah, because I listen at the moment, I'm quite a bear. I just think with the referendum coming up, and all the you know, uncertainty from the Far East, I think, you know, we are on a bit of a rally in a bear market here. It's a bear market rally. So I do believe around about, you know, summertime again, it's going to be hard work. So I don't want to overexpose before then, because you can never tell when it's going to happen, that sort of downturn. So, yeah, I've scaled out. I'm not going big on anything at the moment. You know, I'm not taking a risk, huge risk on anything, because I just feel this sense of foreboding that will come, you know. And I'm not obviously 100% convinced, but I think we're in for volatility over the summer, you know.
I think anybody who's overextending himself in this market is absolutely crazy. I think that's exactly the right thing to do. It's only what I've been trying to advise myself. I just perhaps I've gone around it in the wrong way in some respects. A lot of people think that the comments I've made towards Johnson are personal. You know, this is a guy that I've had a lot of communications with over the years. You know, I've supported his company back in the early days. So it's a similar thing to 88 Energy. People forget that. At half a penny, I was writing an article why people should buy this stock. And I did the same with Metal Tiger at spot 60, 70, 80, 90. So it's not like, you know, I've not been a supporter of these companies. I'm just a little bit sick and tired of the kind of commentary in social media and in social circles that we see on a day-to-day basis, where people just put the bull case out and you never actually hear the bear case. And I think if we can find a bit of balance, find a bit of healthy debate, it's actually going to bode well for those people that are coming into this market space and using these kind of platforms to research, discuss or debate potential companies to invest in or not, as it may be. You know, it seems that there's a general consensus that if you make any comments, you're either long or short, you're talking your own book, you're bashing. You know, unfortunately, it's that kind of toxic influence that's come from bulletin boards has now manifested itself into the social media circles. But let me tell you, you're much better to have a contrary view and to go with an uber bullish one than just to get the crap that we're seeing on a day-to-day basis. I'm far from impressed with the way that people are discussing companies right now. And, you know, as I say, I've been particularly positive towards Metal Tiger, give them a lot of airtime. I spoke to him and interviewed him when nobody was interested in it, when these guys couldn't get any trade through the company. I'd be on the phone to Paul and we'd be discussing what the business was doing and where it was going. I've had loads of different conversations and chats with Paul about certain companies that look to offer value should the resource sector start to turn. So it makes me laugh really and cringe sometimes at the comments that are thrown towards me, but it goes with the territory. I've got skin as thick as a rhino, so we crack on with it. But again, you know, it's you're doing the right thing, because if Metal Tiger do go on and 100 bag like Terry Graham has done, or they do go on and they secure all of this great news from Thailand and Botswana, then great, everybody's making a pretty penny. But if you've de-risked on that capital, you've made sure that you're not overextended, and you accept that with all of these great assets, whether it be Thailand, Philippines, Botswana, they need to be funded on an operational basis. And the only way you can do it is by this company needing to raise some cash. So you realise why we're getting all of this positivity just flooding into the market right now, then you'll understand with this company and others exactly how this thing works. You know, it's a machine, it's got mechanical parts, and you've got to understand how every bit works. Otherwise, you'll never be able to fix it for yourself, for your portfolio to run successfully.
Yeah, and it's a simple mechanic, isn't it, risk-reward. Now, you know, as investors, we often play this the wrong way around. We think, you know, that we think there's more risk, you know, when the price is going down. But, you know, if you look at the value of a company, what it's got, if the price is at rock bottom there isn't. If you can see a support level there and you can see net assets, you know, there's less risk there. Now, there's more risk when the price shoots up, you know, for your capital, because, it's, you know, like I said, the pressure's only going to go one way there. It can carry on a little bit. No one can put a time frame on it. But it does get riskier the higher the price goes for your capital. And so it's always nice to pull a bit off, I suppose. Okay, let's end a bit here on a bullish note. Any tiddlers you're looking at the moment that are very interesting?
New ones, it's difficult really to find anything that's really new and exciting, you know, within the markets. I noticed EKF Diagnostics are off 13-14% today. That kind of 8-9p range looks quite good. Emprion 5.5p, they look to have a bit of value in them. I noticed that you know, Nostra Terra's taken a slamming this morning because they put an announcement out that the Nomads resigned. The part that people may not understand is Sanlam, as a company, are more or less pulling out of the UK. That they've not had a great success while they've been here, and the transitional period, and this isn't normal by any respect, so, you know, I just want to be clear about that. This isn't the normal kind of announcement that you would get when there's going to be a part of one company and a starting of a relationship with a new one. But it does seem quite odd that the company have announced that they're going to resign. I think that the transition hasn't been a great one. I've got no doubt that Nostra are going to get themselves another Nomad, but it seems to have shaken the market up. So that was an interesting point to follow.
I heard someone, who else mentioned Sanlan? I think it was PCGE mentioned Sanlan last week, and I think the share price took a tiny bit of a knock because of that, because they'd gone with was it Arden?
I mean, just, I think what you've got to do is you've got to look at what's pushing these things on, you know, and you've got to look at if, you know, Sanlam are on the way. If the whole group is pulling out of the UK, then it's going to affect companies, and they've got to make that announcement. It's the transition that you go through. You've got to make it a smooth one. So we'll wait and see. You know, we'll wait and see what happens. There'll be other companies affected. It's always the case. You know, we see brokers change. We see Nomads change, and we also see it for the wrong reasons. You know, I remember when, I think was it Daniel Stewart and Hume and these other companies that have all kind of slid down the pan. There was another company out there that, Fox Davis, you know, they were in circulation at one time. It's now Brandon Hill, but it's the transition from one owner to a new one, or from one company to another, or whether there's some M&A activities that's happening within the broker or Nomad space. It's how you do it, and from what I can see, there's been a few of these small cap companies that are being affected because the transition's not being very well placed. Before I go, I just spotted Ariane Silver. I just want to pass a comment on that. The company announced that there was a potential deal that would be done. A couple of weeks have passed now. We're seeing it heavily speculated. I'd be very surprised if they don't do a deal. particularly after speaking to Jim myself. So once that comes, I think that's going to start to kind of draw a line in the sand, and we'll start to see a new level found. He's confident that the warrant holders are going to be able to exercise at 1.5p because he's going to be trading at a significant premium to that. Let's wait and see. At 1.2p, wouldn't be the worst entry in the world.
Yeah, marvellous. All right, Doc, listen, we've covered about, I think about 10 stocks here. So it's value for money. Doc, thanks for speaking, fella. Speak next week.
All the best, Just. Thanks for your time.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is CEO of TriStar Resources. It's Guy Eastor. Thanks for joining me, Guy.
You're very welcome. Nice to speak to you.
You too. Now, tell me about TriStar Resources. I'm not overly familiar. I'm sure there are some people listening that are. But give me a broad outline as to what you do there, Guy.
We are a technology company that is investing in an antimony facility being built in the Sultanate of Oman. And our particular focus is the construction of an antimony roaster in the port of Sohar in Oman to take antimony concentrate and create ingot and also antimony trioxide. And antimony is an important metal. It's a minor metal. It's not one of the big well-known metals, but it's an important metal around the world, particularly for applications that concern flame retardant applications. And the market worldwide in antimony is about 200,000 tons a year, and our facility will be capable of producing up to 20,000 tons a year.
So that's 10% of the overall market?
Yes, that's correct. So mostly, currently the world market is concentrated in China, but ours will be the first facility built to Western environmental standards outside of China.
I see. And so where are you at the moment with this plant?
Well, we had a particularly eventful year last year, Justin. We started work on the roaster back in 2012, 2013, and we built a consortium of three equity participants in the region. The Oman Investment Fund, they are a 40% owner. Ourselves, TriStar, we're a 40% owner. And there's another Dubai construction company that owns 20%. And we brought that group together during the course of 2014, signing a shareholders agreement. But in 2015, the joint venture, which is called Strategic and Precious Metals Processing LLC, that's the company that I've been talking about in which we have 40%. It achieved financial close, was fully funded by its equity partners, of course, of which we are one. And more recently in this year, in February 2016, SPMP announced that they'd appointed a lead contractor to build the facility, the roaster facility, over the next 18 months, looking towards commissioning in September 2017.
Okay, and antimony. Like I said, it's one of the minor metals, not one that's well-known. What's the price of it? How does it trade out? And has it suffered, in softness like other commodities as well?
It has suffered. I mean, it has traded. It's not as volatile as some of the other metals and ores. It's currently trading between $5,000 and $6,000 a ton. It has been higher than that. It's been over 10,000, but it's been relatively stable over the last few years in the sort of the 7 to 9 region. But recently, it has been depressed. But that's not uncommon with other metals and other commodities around the world, given the turbulence in economic markets.
Yeah, I'm looking at your joint venture partners there, and they sound like well-heeled, companies. Are they?
Well, OIF is the Sovereign Wealth Fund.
Yes, of Oman.
Yes, correct. Dutco is a very substantial, that's the Dubai-based trading company. They're a very substantial construction company in the region. And they all have fully paid up their equity contributions along with TriStar. This project got underway and received credit committee and funding before the actual calamitous or precipitous fall in oil prices. So it's we're confident that it will continue to have the full support of those shareholders.
Yeah, now you're focusing mainly on that area there, but you also have assets in Canada and Turkey, is that right?
We do. We have a mine in Turkey. It's currently not producing, not economic at these levels. And we have some assets that we acquired in Canada, an antimony discovery called Bald Hill. And we have we've maintaining our licenses in that region, although we're not in a position to fund any further exploration in Canada, so we've taken a write down there this year.
Okay, and I suppose they're on the back burner for now, are they?
Yes.
All right, so going forward then, Guy, the next milestone is what?
The next milestone will be news from us about construction out in Oman, looking at the build program, progress we're making there. We have an AGM on the 12th of May. I think you can expect a statement from TriStar around that time, just an update as to where we are. But really, it's about feeding back now information from Oman on the progress of the build.
Okay. When I'm looking at, especially junior sort of miners or resource companies, I always like to look through an acronym, and that's the acronym of CASH. And C is for cash. And I've seen you have some cash there, don't you?
Yes. We raised money last year to invest contribute our equity stake in the roaster company. We also sold our intellectual property to that company. And so we've started the year with £1 million in the bank as of the end of February. And we are a clean going concern report from the auditors. So we've got sufficient funds for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, and I notice you've taken a bit of a cut there on the old. You're trying to pay down costs, and isn't it about 51%? You've reduced the board of directors' remuneration.
Costs have come down significantly through 2015, and also other admin expenses have come down significantly. And a lot of the cost-cutting measures that we put in place at the end of last year will come through during this year. And I think you can infer from our accounts that our operating costs are below the 1 million mark. Given that there's no longer a qualification or an emphasis of matter in our going concern statement, that we have sufficient funds for the next 12 months. So that shows you the progress that we've made and the attention that we're paying to costs.
Yeah, and I see you've got a bit of skin in the game yourself, so that's always a good thing. So if you can, Guy, in some way, give me three reasons as to why an investor should put TriStar Resources on their watch list, please.
Yes, no, thank you for the opportunity. I mean, it's a unique company in that we are investing in an important but minor metal around the world, in a new facility, in a low-cost environment, in a good geographical region of the globe, building a facility to the highest environmental standards, the first time that's going to be done in the Western part of the world, outside of China. So that's the first point. Yep. We've got a clear strategic focus. You'll see that we do have assets around the world, but our clear focus is supporting and being an active participant in the roaster project through our 40%. And we have sufficient money for the next 12 months. And if we receive our contingent payment of $2 million, even further than that, because we're still owed a contingent payment from the roaster of $2 million, which of course would be greatly assist our working capital position. So those are the three points that I'd like to make for our audience.
Marvellous. And the market there, as soon as you're producing antimony, I mean, it's very sellable. Is it straight away you'll have a market there, a ready market?
Yes, we think it's a good long-term prospect for the metal worldwide and a number of important applications and also growing applications outside of flame retardants. But I mean, flame retardants are going to be the major market for the medium term.
Marvellous. Guy, lovely to chat to you. And like I said, you've got an exciting year ahead. So please come back on and chat some more when there's some more news out there.
Thank you very much, Justin.
The Box Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is market commentator at Admiral Markets UK, Darren Sinden. You're right, Daz.
Yeah, not too bad at all, Justin. Thank you.
Now, I like to have a range of opinions on the podcast, and you've been a bear for quite a while, and I like that because I am a bit of a bear. You know, I think we are we're having a bear market rally, I believe, and in fact, that you resemble you have bear like qualities when I look at you.
And do I? What sort of big and cuddly?
Yeah, but have you? Because as long as I've known you've been on the podcast, you've always been quite bearish. Now, are you a perma bear or are you just more bearish now?
No, it is fair to say, Justin, that since we've been speaking, I have been on the bearish tack. You would have, if we'd been speaking in 2007-08, you would have seen me more on the bull tack, and I was keen on things then. But what I've always been, I think, is something of a realist, and I try to cut through the hype and look at the facts as I see them, the underlying facts as I see them, and try and blow the froth or the irrational exuberance off of people's expectations, because it's very easy for private investors in particular to get carried away.
Yeah.
And to miss the alarm bells. I mean, we all want markets, let's be honest, we all really want markets to go up. Mm. But what I try and tell people is, don't forget that things can move in two ways, and you need to position yourself for a fall, which is inevitable. We're in a seventh year now of the S&P rallying. Mm. It's never happened before, and there's no reason to think that it should carry on indefinitely.
Yeah, and I don't know what I heard from, but I think it was the Chancellor saying now we're in the most uncertain time since the financial crash that we've ever been in, and it's, even if it's just that uncertainty that plays upon the markets, it's a bad thing. And we keep having, I tweeted out this morning, very early this morning. I get up and I get ready, and then by about I'm looking at the internet by about 5 o'clock in the morning. So I tweeted out some bad data again from China, and I think it was factory output, and I know they're trying to adjust from what they say is an export-led economy, but we've had so many bad figures out from China. So I did tweet, how much of this data do we need before we realise China is in a bit of a bad way? I know some people are saying they're not expanding at all, they're contracting. And so it's almost like we have the ability as private investors to turn a blind eye to this, but we shouldn't, should we,
No, we shouldn't. The classic, if you look back at the books, I'm sure that everybody's read, the Reminiscences of a Stock Operator, and you look at papers about, say, historic bubbles like the tulip bubble in the 17th century Holland, and more recently the Nasdaq bubble around the end of the 90s and the start of the noughties. People acted in the same way. They closed off to external opinions. They sought out opinions that were the same as their own, and reinforced their own beliefs. And what you should be doing is constantly questioning your own assumptions, your own investments, and going back over the reasons why you bought those things in the first place, seeing if the situation has changed, seek out a different standpoint because you may have missed something, somebody may know more about you. Constantly question. Hopefully you'll come back and find that you've if you're open-minded enough, you'll come back and find that you've made the right decisions, but perhaps within that you'll find a contra view and you can adjust your portfolio accordingly. Because nothing, as I say, nothing goes on forever. Lots of stocks have the potential to become sort of emperor's new clothes. I'll just give you another example. There's a brilliant piece by JP Morgan called The Agony and the Ecstasy. It's a piece by their research management arm that they wrote about 2 years ago, and it looks at how people have made money through maybe starting a business and ultimately floating it through an IPO, and then what they've done with their money afterwards and the concentration of risk. Within that report, there's a fantastic piece that plots the fortunes of the average tech stock over the last 30 years. Mm-hmm. And it contrasts the performance of certain stocks to the likes of Apple and Facebook and Google now. Most of the stocks have suffered major losses. It's the net, the sort of the net of that JP Morgan report, and it's too much to talk about now, but basically, yeah, if you really just want to seek that out and read those sections, I think it's a big eye opener, and it's something that I'll be referring to over the coming months and years. Keep going back to it because it's a really decent piece of work.
Yeah, well, I am bearish. I do believe we'll have a horrible summer, and that will be compounded by the Brexit vote and the uncertainty there. But I'm still buying and selling, but I'm doing it on a very much reduced level. I'm not going out on a limb on any stock, because I feel we are like in for a downturn a little bit. And also, do you remember, back in when the financial crash happened, there was what's called the BRIC countries, and these were like the new hope of driving the global economy forward. Now, if you look at the BRIC economies, so you've got Brazil apparently having one of the worst recessions ever. You've got Russia, you know, they're suffering because of oil and the economy's going down. You've got India, which I think is the bright spot amongst them, and you've got China. So out of the four big economies there, you've got one that's doing okay, which is India, I suppose, and the rest are not doing very well.
Yes, yeah, that's very true. Although perversely, in the case of Brazil, it's actually one of the best performing of global stock markets this year. It's actually the Bovespa is actually up about 14.5% year to date. Why that should be, I can't honestly say with any certainty. Maybe just a massive amount of bear closing there, bear covering. You touch on India again. I think that's a market that people are going to have to pay much more attention to. It's for so long it's been overshadowed by China, but I'm doing some background reading over the last week and saw a very interesting strategy note from Credit Suisse, 170 pages of what you should be doing with your money as an institutional investor. The takeaway for me though was in a basket of quality dividend stocks, I noticed for the first time in one of those baskets that they were including Indian names. I'm not saying I'm not particularly familiar with the names themselves and I don't know too much about the underlying businesses, but I just think that's sort of symptomatic of the stuff that we'll be doing going forward, because as we talked about before, dividends are under threat to some extent by the global downturn, and they may be paid today, but dividend growth is what we're really talking about, and that's going to come under increasing pressure, and income investors are going to have to look around for new homes for their money, and I suspect that it won't be too long before we're casting our net into markets like India. Maybe it'll be through collective vehicles. We're very lucky to have a rich deep pool of ETFs and investment trusts that can ameliorate some of the risks for us, but I suspect that people will be looking farther afield to do their business, to invest and to do their business in future.
Yeah, so what will make you a bull then, Daz?
I'd like to see consistent, solid economic data, positive economic data. I look at a chart on a regular basis, which is the Citigroup Economic Surprise Index, and I'm lucky enough to see a plot of about half a dozen major economies and economic regions, and very few, if any, of those are actually consistently surprising to the upside. Now, the one surprise at the moment is the performance of the US economy, and really since the middle of February, there's been many more economic positive surprises than disappointments, if we can put it like that. So they're trending higher. Funnily enough, so is the UK. In effect, of the sort of half a dozen lines that are plus on this chart, the UK is actually the only one that's made a move back to positive territory in recent months. So that's the kind of thing I want to see: consistently strong and positive economic data from economies. And in the case of Japan and the Eurozone, I want to see politicians grasp the nettle and make structural changes to try and get those economies back on track, because monetary policy is just reaching the end of what it can achieve, and if anything, to my mind, it's going to start to produce a diminishing return going forward, particularly with the move to negative interest rates and not a positive one. So monetary policy is at the end of its tether, really, over to Shinzo Abe in Japan, and to Angela Merkel and Francois Hollande and others in Europe to make those difficult choices. But as popular as they will be, we need to make those choices. We have to decide how we're going to spend our money and what benefits we're going to have. And I mean in terms of working week, wages, etc., in the widest concept. That may be a conversation that they'll have, obviously, without the UK, depending what happens in the end of June.
Yeah, and I suppose, and do you make any sort of predictions as where the market you think will go, or how far it will go down, or what?
If we leave, I think that, well, I haven't, it's difficult to quantify. Yeah. I think obviously if the vote is to leave the EU, there will inevitably be a negative movement, just a knee-jerk reaction downward. I actually stand in the camp, I don't think that it will be all bad for us to be outside of the EU. If we can negotiate similar trade terms to what we currently enjoy, we will actually on that basis get back to enjoying the benefits of a common market, which is what it was after all, rather than the negatives of an unelected bureaucracy that appears to interfere with more and more facets of everyday life. So, and in fairness, without getting on my high horse too much, as an organisation doesn't seem to be able to make a decision when an important matter such as the refugee crisis in southern Europe appears, they seem like rabbits in a headlight. They can't decide what they need to do to resolve the situation.
Yeah. Okay. So what was it? I mean, if you for yourself there, if you're an investor or you're talking to private investors, say me, what do you say? Sit tight or what? Just let it play out.
You were on the right track earlier when you said you were pulling back your activity, you know, just perhaps reducing your trade size, et cetera, et cetera. That said, you know, the run-up to the Brexit referendum will create a tremendous amount of opportunity, and it's probably opportunity more for traders than investors, but there will be sharp moves, and if that's your bag, you can probably jump on the back of it. I think you just need to really watch the polls as they develop, the move in the market will be inverse to the strength of the outvote, I would suggest. So I'd watch that. And if you're looking longer term, I think you've just, you know, it's not necessarily a bad time to start doing some homework about, you know, the things we talked about dividend cover, about the likelihood of a business being able to continue to pay dividends, about where companies earn their money. I mean, let's not forget, and I'm sure we touched on this in the past, that the FTSE 100 really has got very little to do with the UK PLC as such, and it's the mid cap where probably more directly affected by any kind of Brexit in the longer term. But within that, there are plenty of companies who are focused on the UK, and plenty of others who are focused on areas of the world outside of the EU. So I think we need to be clear that the EU, whilst it's a large trading partner of the UK, is not the be-all and end-all for many, many companies within the UK. So if you want to take your time now to do your homework to position yourself accordingly, I think it's a good stage to do that.
Marvellous, Daz. Lovely to speak to you. It'd be interesting to see, though, when this... I know we have seen a bit of volatility, but it's been dialed down a bit recently. It'll be interesting to see when this picks back up, because there's no doubt it will pick back up. Do you think the volatility?
Yeah, I do. I think it will, but I think it will be when, you know, at the moment the campaigns are confined to, you know, the odd newspaper report, a bit of news in the evening, and perhaps the odd politician appearing on a political show.
Mm.
What we need to see really is the campaigns gather momentum on both sides. We haven't had any, you know, for instance, party political broadcasts, although clearly there won't be party political broadcasts, there'll be campaign broadcasts. We haven't seen that kind of thing, nor have we seen any kind of suggestion of a debate between the various groups. And I think once the campaigns gather momentum in the coming months and weeks, then I think we'll be able to make a better call on, you know, what's going to move where and why.
Marvellous. @FatDaz on Twitter. Nice to speak to you, Daz. Speak soon.
Thanks very much, Justin.
That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Listen, if you do two things today, if you only ever do two things, do these two things. Go to voxmarkets.co.uk/app and download the app. It's an invaluable free resource. In this day and age, you don't get a lot for free, but this is invaluable, honestly. I get RNS tweets straight away, notifications put straight to my phone, the front screen of my phone, just because I've got the app there, I've logged in, I set up a watch list of companies, and as soon as the company releases information via RNS, I get that straight to the front screen of my smartphone. I almost couldn't say smartphone there. That was quite an irony. Also, don't forget we had a winner on the oil price sweepstake, but it starts again this week. So if you want to win, you know, get the opportunity to get some free cash, all you have to do is guess exactly the price of Brent crude at 12 p.m. on Friday. Submissions close Thursday, 4:30. Take part. It's free cash. It doesn't get any better than that, does it? Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciado.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.